Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone number to call and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Hello to everybody tonight. Appreciate you joining us tonight. We have a good show lined up for you. We've got our first guest will be Bill Hopp. You may have heard of Bill recently. He was involved with the annexation bill, or actually the bill to undo forced annexation here in Tennessee, along with Representative Mike Huss, Van Huss, and Representative Carter from Hamilton County. Bill was very involved with that. He's going to talk to us about another initiative that he has, the Citizens Initiative. And then we're going to have, we actually have some competition for governor this year, or we have a challenger for our governor anyhow. We have Dr. Sean Crowell. He's a veterinarian, and he will be challenging the governor on Constitution Party platform. So we'll be talking to Sean here in a little bit. And we actually have a caller tonight that I just got word of this a little while ago. There's some things going on in Knoxville that you need to know about. So we'll be joined by Mr. John Peach here in a few minutes to give us an update on some of the things that are going on in Knoxville in regards. He's the head of the ACT chapter of Knoxville. And apparently they had an event lined up for a couple of weeks and at a high school, at a local high school. It had been blessed off on. They'd already advertised it. And then the superintendent of schools, because the local Muslims complained, basically said, no, you can't do it here. Now, they still have a venue, and they're still going to do it, and it's basically to explain to people what the threats, you know, the Islamist threat here in America, here in Tennessee. You know, it talks about Sharia law and other things like that that our people need to know about. And, like I say, had it lined up, the Muslims complained, and the superintendent of schools basically told them they had to go somewhere else, find another place. So we have cowards at all levels in our government here in our country and in our state that kowtow to anything that the Islamists want. So we have to fight back against that, and we'll be talking to him here in just a few minutes. A couple of things I want to get to real quick. There's some legislation still pending, and I don't have a bill number. I know they're still working on the park and Common Core. They want to delay the Common Core and to get us out of the park testing. I think it's probably you probably accomplish more getting us out of the park testing than delaying the Common Core because the Common Core is already implemented. But they are working on that. So, you know, kind of keep the pressure on the legislatures, your state legislatures and senators about that. You know, show some appreciation for the ones who are doing the right thing and just kind of keep in touch with them. I don't have a bill number on that for you tonight, but it's still in the works. Basically, enough people have complained that the administration, although they would love to, cannot just blow this one off. There's going to have to be some sort of deal worked out. We'll have to see how that one turns out. There's a few other bills that are going to be voted on this week, maybe as early as tomorrow. The parental rights bill, which is Senate Bill 2559, House Bill 2453, could be on the floor tomorrow. They don't have a time for that one yet. And basically what this does is it requires local school boards that will make policies that authorize parents or guardians to review all teaching materials, instructional materials, and teaching aids, as well as tests developed and graded by the teacher or the student teacher. And that's important because you need to be able to find out what's actually going on in your kid's school. Textbook adoption, they've changed the process there, and the Senate bill, I believe, has already passed. House Bill 2249 was voted out of the Government Operations Committee, but is still in the Finance Subcommittee. So make sure you contact the Finance Subcommittee and keep up some pressure to get that bill passed. That revises the whole process for the Textbook Commission, to where, you know, not just the governors make any appointments. He hasn't done too well at that, on those appointments or any for that matter. Okay. Bill 2409, that was the open carry bill that passed in the Senate already. And now it was in the House. It did have a fiscal note attached to it. And as I understand, that fiscal note has now been removed. So there's no reason that it shouldn't go to the full floor. Maybe as early tomorrow. Don't know yet. But keep your eye on that one. There's a possibility it could pass and that the governor could veto it. If the governor does veto it, it only takes a simple majority to overturn a veto in Tennessee. So keep your eye on that one if you're concerned about your right to keep and bear arms. Okay, well, we've got a few minutes before our first scheduled guest. As I said, we're going to have John Peach calling in here in just a second, but I do have a couple of callers on the line here. And, okay, well, that one, they just disappeared. Anyway, I'll go back here and we'll wait for Mr. Peach, and I'll give you a little more background on that. Dr. James P. McIntyre is the one who canceled the event that was supposed to be held 24 April at Farragut High School. This is in the Knoxville area, basically due to pressure from the local Muslims. I should say Islamist. You know, a Muslim, I guess you could say a Muslim in some cases might just be a cultural Muslim who really does who has no clue about what his religion says, his or her religion is all about. But an Islamist, they know. And believe me, most in Tennessee, they're Islamist. They know what it's all about. And unfortunately, the people that are supposed to know on our side and our elected officials and other representatives just seem to be clueless about this. So hopefully we'll get that taken care of. And still haven't heard from Mr. Peach here yet. He should be popping up on the screen any second now. I want you to think about something. As Memorial Day will be here before you know it, and that's during that time, and of course later on in Veterans Day, we think about those who have fallen, and we show some appreciation for their sacrifices. And that's all as it should be. We should do that. But, you know, when we say we support the troops and we support our veterans, we really need to think about that. And we really need to think, okay, are the things we're doing, are they really, is that enough? I mean, is it okay just to show up with flowers, you know, once a year, go to a ceremony and salute the flag, when the very rights and freedoms that they fought and died for are being undermined here in our country? And if you just go back to September 11th, if you look at what's going on in our country and in Tennessee, and specifically in regards to the Islamist infiltration, you know, this case right here, this is a free speech issue. Okay, they allow, you know, the Muslims are allowed to use a local public library to talk about Islam. However, they didn't want the local citizens to use a high school to speak out against Islam. Unfortunately, Mr. Peach has just popped on the line here, so we'll take it to him. How you doing tonight, John?
Just fine, Dave.
Well, glad you can be with us, and we've got a few minutes here. I just I filled everybody in a little bit, but I want to turn it over to you, and if you could just kind of give us a quick rundown of what's going on and tell us about your event on the 24th.
Let me start with the event. We have a new venue. It's at the Union Cumberland Presbyterian Church in Farragut, which is in West Knoxville. And we're going to have this on April 24th, Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. And our featured speaker is going to be Dr. Bill Warner, who is the foremost authority on political Islam. And the subject is learning what Sharia law is and how it negatively affects Tennessee and the rest of America. Recently, because we had this problem with Muslims in the local area, particularly coming from CARE and coming from the Muslim Student Association, University of Tennessee, they put pressure on Dr. Jim McIntyre, the superintendent of schools, to cancel our venue at Farragut High School. So therefore, we've got a new venue.
Now, let me ask you something. Dr. McIntyre, did he admit this, or did he just say that, you know, people had raised concerns and were complaining, and he just thought it was better not to do it, or exactly what did he tell
this,
you guys?
He used this phony excuse that this was disrupting the learning environment of the students, and yet this is going to be taking place after school hours at 6:30. There hasn't been any person affiliated with us that's ever gone to disrupt any of the students at all. So this was just a phony excuse because he didn't want to admit that the Muslims had pressured him to cancel it.
That's absolutely disgraceful. Is he up for re-election this year?
He just got re-elected by his cronies in the Board of Education.
Wow. So you're stuck with him for at least a little while.
Yes, we are. And he's not a very popular guy anyway. With the common core being a major issue, the teachers have come out against him pretty vociferously. So we're up against it, but we do have a better venue, we feel. The only thing is we believe this is a freedom of speech issue that was initiated against us by the Council on American Islamic Relations, better known as CARE, and the Muslim Student Association. They actually had interviewed the chaplain of the Student Association, and he said that they would feel uncomfortable if this was held in a public assembly. However,
but they hold their events there, right?
They hold their events wherever they want to hold them. They have regular events on the campus of the University of Tennessee, including their own Muslim Student Association, in a tax-funded place. They also go to libraries like the Blount County Library and the Cedar Bluff Library, and have had a series of lessons on how we can better adapt to Muslims.
Good Lord.
So
okay,
what's
so
happened,
have...
Dave, is that our liberties are being taken away. Meanwhile, they're able to just come in our nation and take advantage of our liberty. We could never go to Pakistan or Iraq or Egypt or anywhere and practice what we believe. And now they're trying to take over our nation with Sharia law and with their demands that Sharia law will take over the Constitution.
And cowards like Dr. McIntyre are just helping them. They're helping them at our expense. Well,
right.
I appreciate you alerting us to this. I wish I had a little more time to dedicate to this tonight. I already had everything lined up, or I'd give you a lot more time. But real quick, what kind of response are you getting from the locals there? Are people fired up about this?
They're pretty fired up, but more are coming out of the woodwork now. Because the line is drawn in the sand. Most people just tend to be neutral. They don't want to get involved. They don't see how Sharia law or the radical Muslim are affecting their local community. So they say, well, so what? Now they're going to have to realize what we're up against, that this is a battle. It's not something where you can just sit on the sidelines.
No, you can't. Well, I hope you fill the house, or fill the church, as it were, and
right.
I hope the people that, you know, everybody across the state realizes what's going on and fights back on this. And
well,
we
everywhere that Dr. Warner has been, there's there's been a strong reception because he's so well wide known. He's authored 12 books, and he's just, like I said, the expert on radical political Islam.
Well, John, I hate to cut you short, and I'd like to have you. I will probably have you back next week for at least a few minutes, and you know, we'll talk about this event again. And I appreciate you coming on, and God
all
bless.
Right.
Keep up the good fight.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you. America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is a reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalowski, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing doctrine of all time and what you can protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalowski, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. All right, now we have Bill Hopped on the line here. We're going to get straight to our next guest. Bill, how you doing tonight?
Good. How about you, David?
Pretty good, pretty good. I don't know if you heard Mr. Peach just now about what was going on in Knoxville.
Yeah,
I want to make
one more quick
plug on that. That event is the 24th at the Union Cumberland Presbyterian Church in Knoxville, and I'm sure that this is going to be getting out across the state. I don't have a start time on that, but we will make sure that word gets out. I know Act for America will have a release that's going to go out across the country tomorrow, so we'll be following that. Well, Bill, you've been a busy guy this session, haven't you?
Yeah, quite busy. Thank you.
and you were recognized in the Eagle Forum for your work on Tennessee Eagle Forum by Bobby Dre for your work on the bill to end forced annexation. So you have a little bit of a political background. And congratulations. Thank you and congratulations on that victory. We're just waiting for the governor's signature on that. But the next thing that I know you're ready to get into is the Citizens Initiative process. And I know when some people hear that, they get real nervous, and they're kind of leery of it. So tell us a little bit about the Citizens Initiative, and maybe the first thing is explain to people what the Citizens Initiative is not, because they've probably heard some misinformation about it.
Yeah, well, that is the problem. The first time you mention that, people go ballistic because they look at some of the crazy bills that pass in California, for example, which is a very unique situation and very contrary to the norm, because we've also passed some very strong conservative legislation for the same movement. But it sends up red flags because people do not understand the process. And essentially, it's very simple. It is not a replacement for representative government. It is not a replacement for activism. It is not a replacement for lobbyists. It does not replace anyone. It supplements their ability to get their job done. That's all it is. It's just one more tool in the process. And that's all it is. Initiatives are generated. We just fought for 3 years. I did in North Carolina, in Tennessee, and now in Indiana, I'm working up there with them to reform their annexation laws and give the citizens a referendum. So there's nothing new. This is only a referendum generated by the citizens rather than a government body or a group of legislatures. Nothing more. That's all it is.
And so it doesn't replace them. You're still going to have the legislators. You're still going to need the lobbyists. You're still going to get everybody on board. It's just initiated a little differently.
Precisely. And believe me, it is not an easy process to get an initiative qualified. I spent 40 years in California, 40-plus years, in California politics, and in fact, I do handle all the reporting for the Franklin Center in Virginia for California politics because I know a great deal about it. And we ran 40 some odd bills in California this way, many bills for like Ronald Reagan and others, where they could not penetrate a dysfunctional legislature. But again, it's very difficult to qualify an initiative. And once that initiative is qualified, you have to still promote it, sell it, and vote on it. But initiatives can be generated through any means. We here have initiative to end to define abortion in the Constitution, Proposition 1. The legislature can give us an initiative. The county level, say, can generate an initiative to raise a wheel tax. Our city municipality can generate an initiative if they want to now, as of this year, annex my property. So this is nothing new. It is just simply one that the citizens themselves decide, okay, we can't get something done, so we want to try and generate the initiative. And for example, in California, they passed initiatives to outlaw giving citizens, illegal aliens, certain services unless they registered. It was pretty simple, straightforward. You register so we know how many people are here and who they are so we can develop a budget. Yeah, it wasn't very contentious, but it passed overwhelmingly. Two times they outlawed or they defined marriage as, in a state where there is a very large amount of gay and lesbians. So it is a tool only you could add to the arsenal. Senator Beavers took arrows all legislature about her health care. Well, if we know that if we put an initiative on the ballot to outlaw national health care in Tennessee, we would pass that. So these are the useful tools where a legislature can give that legislation to the citizens. They won't even write the bill. They'll just say, would you run this for us? And so it's just another tool. That's all it is.
Well, what do you think the biggest fear is? I mean, I guess legislators might fear it because obviously it kind of undermines their power, but then again, you're not going to use it for everything. It would be used fairly infrequently, I would imagine.
Well, the beauty is it's just one more tool that says, okay, Mr. Legislature, we have a bicameral legislature. About 49 states have a bicameral legislature. And let me clarify this. I've taught government. I've studied it. We have no way that we could have direct democracy in America because of the geography of the nation. Our founders, we had the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists that went to great lengths to make sure that we had a republic and not direct democracy. It would be impossible for us to vote, although we might do a better job than those guys in Washington on every item that comes up. So we have representative governments, and we are putting their people, quote-unquote, they're supposed to represent us. So it could never work at that level of government anyway. So this is why it's an effective tool when the legislature has it and they say, okay, if we better come to something that meets all our approval and everyone's approval, and if we don't, then the citizens might just step in the fray and run it themselves. So it keeps everybody honest, and it helps good legislatures. And as you know, Prop 13, my first major one, I worked on a number before that, but this is one I got in on the ground floor with a couple of other guys. They have been undoing ever since I was running a protection organization, or part of a protection organization to protect the tenants of this major tax bill. They've been undoing it every year. So the legislature can undo a bad initiative the next session if they do not like it. And but how is it going to pass if citizens don't want it? And it's not a scary thing.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't be. But I mean, I know there's some people that I have a lot of respect for, but they're like, oh, this is a bad idea. I don't really quite see that because I don't see it, like you say, it's not going to be a substitute. You're not going to do it all the time. You're going to have a pretty high threshold to even get it through. And let's just talk a little bit. If we were going to do this in Tennessee, we'd have to pass a constitutional amendment first to even have initiative process in Tennessee, correct?
Yes. I mean, it's so involved. Today, I think the most important thing is to clear up ambiguity and to educate. As you know, you read what I write. I write for a 501c3. I don't do hit pieces. I do education pieces. And, you know, that's the scariest thing in the world. They're a constitutionally conservative organization I write for. But if you tell the truth, that's scary. And but that's what we want to do is educate people and let them make up their own mind and generate some food for thought because it is a process where we have to start from the ground floor and generate enough interest and make people realize that an activist group, a very strong Tea Party group, for example, instead of just being supportive of a bill that is out there, they can actually get behind a bill that they help write or help a legislature write and get something done. They become more important. The lobbyists, like Bobby, they become more important because they claim ownership of that. They have an actual piece of that. And the beauty is there's no egos. I'm not a famous guy. I worked in 40-some-odd movements myself, and I'm not in a history book anywhere because that's the beauty of it. There's no egos. There's nobody to stroke. Everybody gets a pat on the back. It's done. 1 year, you pass or you lose, and you move on. So it's pretty much a no-brainer process, but it is a difficult thing to, first of all, get passed. Secondly, it's a very difficult thing to qualify. You know, standing out in front of Kmart, Walmart, when we passed Prop 13 in 1978, there was no internet. You know, we did that, walking neighborhoods, rain, sun.
It was all boots on the ground, right?
All boots on the ground. We had a couple of guys, one in the southern part of the state, one in the northern part, and I was kind of hitting the effort in the center part. But we were passing petition from door to door to door to door, and I mean, it was very involved. But by the time it got passed, I think we passed like 68% of the vote, which is pretty good in a liberal state like that. People all claimed ownership of it, and now today it's the third rail of California politics, although it's almost gone.
Because the judiciary is undermined it.
Well, the judiciary, yes, but they can undo anything done by anybody. I've heard this, well, you know, they undid everything you guys did. Well, that's not our fault. we did our job, you know, but that was what the people wanted. And if somebody dares to undo what the people want that is a good law, then they're going to pay the price. But, that's the way it is. It is not a threat to anybody. It's a help. It's an asset. If it's handled properly. But again, you have people that don't understand the process and need an education, and it's difficult sell.
Now, as I understand it, with the some of the legislation this year, for instance, the textbook legislation, I know that issue was raised not because some legislator said, hey, you know, we really needed to fix this, but because some private citizens got involved. It was the private citizens that made it an issue, that made the textbooks the issue that they are. Matter of fact, it was private citizens that prompted some of the legislators in terms of the Common Core issue. And, you know, the governor is fighting tooth and nail. He wants to implement Common Core. And, you know, if we had an initiative, like you said, I'm pretty sure that's something that we might just be able to do a little easier, maybe not, but they wouldn't be able to pull some of the shenanigans that they pull on us. They'll send something to a committee and they'll say, okay, well, you know, we're going to send it to a finance committee and give it a fiscal note, which is, oh, well, you know, we'd really love to do this. We just can't afford to do it.
That is the problem.
So there's a lot of maneuvering that goes on, and the current process is undermined by those things. So I don't see anything wrong personally, with having another venue. Like you say, there's still a high bar. I mean, first off, it would take us several years to even get the initiative passed because we'd have to do a constitutional amendment. Secondly, as you say, the bar would be kind of high, and we'll talk about that in a minute. All right, I'm up against a hard break. Got to take a real quick short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and I'm talking with Bill Hopp, and we're talking about the Citizens Initiative process. Bill, one of the other concerns that I've heard mentioned was that, the public is, and this is true, the public is so uneducated on so many things that, there's a fear of having people get involved with something like this. I don't know. I haven't been impressed with a lot of the legislators up there. I understand that, among the public, there's a lot of apathy and a lot of ignorance, but there's really only a handful of legislators I'm impressed with. Whether you're talking about their knowledge and or even respect for state or federal constitutions, you're talking about a fairly small crowd in that regard. And then some of them are just really not all that bright. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, let's take – here's a perfect example. In fact, it's affected me personally very badly. A legislature didn't even write a recent drug bill. It was written by a chief of police, no input from a medical doctor or a pharmaceutical technician. It was written by a chief of police. Does he know – about drug dispensing? No, he only knows how to put crooks in jail. When a citizen comes to a booth to vote, the first time we came down here, we didn't even get a sample ballot. We find out we were supposed to look in some throwaway newspaper that never came to our house. And so we didn't even know what we were working on. There's 40 guys on there that we never even heard about. We had to leave them blank because we didn't know. A citizen's initiative, you're only going to have one or two propositions on. You can limit it to two, to one, to three, to four. That is going to get such high rate of publicity because the citizens, the activists, everybody is driving that. By the time they get there, they're going to be very passionate about that. They will know more about that than they do about a lot of legislation that just kind of ends up, you know, filtering its way through the system.
Right.
Now, so people are going to know about it.
Well, even with legislatures, I mean, I guess they do, what, a couple thousand bills a year? And
yeah.
If it's not a bill
between the two houses, yeah.
Yeah, and if there's not a bill that comes through your committee, odds are you're not going to know really anything about that bill till right before you vote on it, and then you're not going to know much. There's no way that anybody could keep up with all of those bills, yet we elect these people to go vote on 2,000 or 3,000 bills a year. And like I say, admittedly, they generally only focus on those that come through their committee. So they're voting on a lot of things that, you know, they're only – look at it will be right before they vote on it. So they're not necessarily making educated decisions themselves, even if they were inclined to be. There's just not the time allowed. Maybe that's an argument for limiting the number of bills that's being voted on in a year, but I don't see that one ever happening.
No, that'll never. Well, they did that in the House. They only can do run 15, but, you know, like I want my personal senator, who, you know, I'm very fond of because she is very strong supporter of us, the people, May Beavers. She has us at a meeting once a month, and we discuss those things. But there's not a lot of representatives. I can't speak for all of them. I live in Wilson County, but she comes out and talks to us about it. At least we have a chance to interface and tell her about our concerns that somebody else has. But
right.
As you know, people don't get involved and coalesce around something of interest to them, and their particular representative doesn't know about it. It's not their fault, by the way. They can't keep track of those kind of bills. That's why we need, in general, even in a bicameral legislature like we have, we need to help them carry the load and tell them this is a bad bill. This drug bill is going to limit senior citizens to only a 30-day supply of their much-needed medications, and they're in nursing homes, how are they going to get there every 30 days to get a refill? Things like that, you know.
Right. Now, you mentioned earlier that most of these initiatives have a fairly high bar. Can you give us an example? And obviously that's something that would, whenever you propose the legislation, you know, if we were to do that here in Tennessee, that's something that would have to be in the constitutional amendment. So what are some normal bars or normal you know, standards in order to get something passed through an initiative process?
Well, essentially, you have a qualifying process. It's very involved. First of all, you have to make sure you, yourself, and the people you work with know the law, and that's the beauty of it. I've been writing law for over 40 years. I did study law, constitutional law, but I'm not a lawyer, and I study each statute. I know that law, like I did with annexation when I first wrote my first bill. I knew that law, and I knew it like inside and out. I had 7 binders of Supreme Court decisions when I put the thing together. Now, I don't know every other law, but I cross-referenced everything. So the person writing that bill is going to get together with the right people, and they're going to write the right bill. So that is hard enough to do. Then you have to gather a determined amount of signatures, which they set the bar fairly high there, too, because if you've got some bad signatures on there, they throw them out. And
right.
Then you take those to a steering committee or a secretary of state. They verify this, the constitutionality of the bill, make sure it's done. The same thing with legislature. When they write a bill, they take it to one of the guys in legal down there. I take my bills every time down there and have them scrutinize them and say, where am I going to fall into that? How am I going to get this phantom fiscal note on this thing? You know, what did it do with May's health care bill? A $1 zillion fiscal note appeared on it overnight, you know.
Yeah. Well, Bill, we got a caller on the line here. If we can go to caller real quick, and I think I recognize this number. How are we doing tonight, Kyle?
How are you doing? I'm catching in a little bit late, but I think y'all talking about the fiscal notes that are being attached to these bills.
Yes. One of the things, yes.
And my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but fiscal notes come from the Secretary of State. Is that correct?
Not Bill. That I know of. Now, I am not that familiar with our bicameral legislature, but I know anybody can suggest one. I think it is up to one individual to approve it. I don't know who it approved, but I do know anybody can propose it. And we were talking about May and Mike's gun bill. That did come end up with another phantom fiscal note of $100,000, which I was talking to Micah last night. Micah has said that he will personally raise the $100,000. In fact, Dave, one of your guys is going to donate to cover that personally.
Well, I've got an update on that. By the way, they removed the fiscal note. That would, he made that proposal, and I heard a couple hours ago on the way home, John Harris was on the radio, and they have removed the fiscal note. So that bill, unless they do some shenanigans real quick, that bill should go to the floor for a full vote. To answer your question, Kyle, I think there's a fiscal review board. I don't know if it falls under the control of the Secretary of State or not, or the comptroller or whoever, but I know there's a fiscal review board that attaches, and you know, they just come up with these numbers. I don't know how you contest them. I don't think there's any way to contest it and say, well, you know, prove your math. I think you're just kind of stuck with what they throw out there.
It's a way to get it to two very difficult committees, sub-fi and fi, and that's where you run into all your problems.
Well, my point is, I'm thinking that's coming either from the Secretary of State or the Comptroller, who is appointed by the legislature. If the Secretary, and again, I've got to go back and look at this, but if it is coming from the Secretary of State and the Comptroller, the legislature appoints those people. And if those people that give them, are the ones that give them problems, then at that point it looks like we need to either get rid of either Trey or Justin Wilson, whoever who's causing the problem. But obviously there's a problem here, and we need to point and figure out who that is.
Well, anybody can generate it. I was talking to Joe, who's running for another office, and he explained it to me, because I was a freshman 3 years ago to the bicameral Tennessee legislature, and he told me anybody can suggest or come up with an arbitrary fiscal note, and if it sounds good to somebody, it's done. I do not know the exact person responsible for approving it.
Wow. You would think that would be pretty much a set pattern, you know, some set policies to follow to establish that, I would have thought.
And I've got to go back, and I'm going to look at that too, and I may even make a phone call to find out if I'm correct. But I was thinking that's coming from either the Secretary of State or the Comptroller, because it's not coming from the judiciary, and I don't think that comes from the executive branch. So it's got to come from the legislative branch, and the legislative branch, those arms are either Comptroller or Secretary of State.
To have you post that on the Against Forced Annexation page, on the Facebook page, so I could look into that, because I am doing a column on that right now for the Franklin Center and for my local editor here on the phantom fiscal peril that automatically appears every time we have a good piece of legislation. And
I've got to step in here
real
quick.
I'll see if I can find an answer for that real quick.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks,
take care. Bye-bye.
ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Bill Hopped about the Citizens Initiative process. So let's just say that we had enough interest to do this in Tennessee. Of course, the first step would be to get it through the a constitutional amendment. But how would it be structured beyond that, assuming that we went all through the hoops? What are some other things that we would need to incorporate into this? And obviously, one of the first steps is to, I guess, basically calm down some people who are very concerned when they hear the term citizens initiative. They get very nervous and they have some misunderstanding about it. Obviously, you have to win the PR war on that. But let's talk a little bit more about what a process would look like if we were to get it passed.
Well, first of all, good question. And that is the most important thing, because the greatest fear in the world is fear of the unknown. And once people are educated, they will look at this. They will understand the process. It is a very good process and an equitable process. Once that is done, and by the way, I do have a book coming out. It Takes a Movement, A Citizen's Guide to Writing and Passing Law, where I go into great detail with this, which will be out later this year, hopefully. And that process is pretty simple, but it is very difficult to accomplish. You test the waters. Dave and I, you and me, we come up with an idea. Hey, let's outlaw Obamacare in Tennessee. I know we won't do that, but I'm just saying, and using this as an example, we test the waters. We go out, we talk about it, we write editorials about it, we get people to look into it, we talk, we generate an interest to see if there's enough interest to follow this. Once we generate that interest, we say, okay, we have enough people that are willing to assist us in this. We're starting a movement, a reform movement. Then what we do is we gather the law, we coalesce with the right kind of people that know the law, some healthcare people, some attorneys, some people that know the constitutionality of things. We put together something that works. Then we go to the state, we file a fee to pay for them, by the way. There is no fiscal note on this, to pay them to review this, to check the constitutionality of it, just like any legislature goes down there and brings it to the legal department. So it shouldn't be cost.
Right.
It shouldn't cost us anything. They say yay or nay, or they tell us what we have to do to clean it up, and we have a bill. Then we have a qualifying process. We start a signature drive, and we have a whole lot of people that have to sign off on this. You can't hire some signature guys and pay them $1 a signature. No, that's against the law. They do that in California, by the way. And
oh, I'm sure they do.
But we can't. The constitutional amendment I sent you is 13 pages. I made sure that wasn't in there. And I took the best of all 25 states and came up with something, a skeletal structure for something to look at. And then you take that, you go out and you work the shopping centers, you do it through social media, you generate the interest, you explain things to them, you get enough signatures on the petition, you take it to then the steering committee or the secretary of state, whoever is appointed. They review that if they like it, and you qualify, and they verify the signatures, and that you have enough. Then it goes through a vetting committee there to make sure that the constitutionality, that everything, that all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. You really have to do your homework to make sure you do it right. And
okay.
Then
we've got a caller on the line here. I want to go ahead and see if he has a question or a comment. Caller, go ahead. Caller, you have a question or a comment? Okay, I guess not.
Well, you got to steer away.
Okay, just continue on, Bill. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you have to, a legislature, all they have to do is write a bill, take it down there, legal approves it, they put it out there, and bingo. But for us to do it, it's 100 times harder, because we obviously don't have the brains to come in out of the rain, and we can't walk and chew gum at the same time, so therefore we have to be vetted, vetted, yearly. So it's not that easy at all. But once the bill has been processed through all of the different, we've jumped up through all the hoops, and we've done everything, finally we might have it approved and put on the ballot for the next election. No fiscal note, because not having a special election or anything, and it's a yay or nay. You win, you lose. And that's how simple it is, but it's a very arduous and difficult process to work. And yet, there's no glory in it. Now, believe me, there is no glory because you're working as a team. Everybody wins or everybody loses.
How many states currently have this?
25 plus that snake pit there, Washington, D.C. And it started, it's interesting, if you look at that map I sent you, there's only one original colony that had the Citizens Initiative. That was, that has one now, I think that was Massachusetts. The rest of them were all newer states, which is interesting, and there's no southern states except Kentucky, which is a flex state. South Dakota came up with one in the late 1800s, 1897, I think it was, where they were the first, and then Oregon adopted what they call the Oregon system, which they refined it and made it much more similar to our bicameral system. And then people followed suit from that and drew from that and made their own improvements. So it kind of had a rippling effect, and it was used to make some very progressive and much needed reforms that the legislatures weren't comfortable doing on their own and did not have enough support, especially now today with a divided House. We couldn't get the Bill of Rights through the first committee, you know. And
looking at something that you sent me, 2013 Wall Street Journal listed some of the best-run state economies in government, and four out of the five had the Citizens Initiative. That's North Dakota, Wyoming, Nebraska, Utah, and Iowa. And the first four out of those five actually have a Citizens Initiative. And of course, I mean, that's something that could be used in regards to taxes and whatnot or whatever. But I wonder if there really is a link to the states that have these Citizens Initiative in terms of how well they're ran overall. Also lists 7 out of the 10, and this is from Forbes, 7 out of 10 of them have the Citizens Initiative. That's the most debt-free states. I'm kind of surprised at some of these states here, a little surprising, but it lists Kentucky, West Virginia, Montana, Nebraska, Idaho, Wisconsin, South Dakota, Utah, North Dakota, and Iowa. And they also have a Citizens Initiative.
Yeah, and now, again, these are just numbers. You know, anybody who wants to defeat this can skew their own data. This is data I picked up to support the fact that it is not necessarily a burden, a financial burden, where people are out going crazy, passing stupid, idiotic legislation that costs the state a whole bunch of money. An interesting point to make, if there is a phantom fiscal note that appears, it has to be handled through a bond. So the people themselves are voting a tax increase on themselves. Keep that in mind now. Let's say they want a statue of Obama downtown in their town. Well, they can file an initiative and pass that and finance that by granting themselves a tax hike. So this is not, you know, this is a two-bladed sword, you know. And so there is, you know, and naturally we control property taxation in California, and believe it or not, we had for two decades that led to the development of the dot-com industry because businesses flocked there because they knew what their base tax was going to be. Regardless, I did work on a lot of tax issues, being a tax guy. But people can raise taxes, too. They don't just vote to lower taxes. They can recall a public official. In California, they recalled Gray Davis, who was just destroying the state, and they put a good old Arnold in there, you know.
Think of a few people I'd like to recall here in Tennessee, like, most of our – let's see, we can start with our governor, both of our senators. There's probably only one or two reps that shouldn't be recalled. So, yeah, I like the thought of that.
Yeah, but it's nothing to be afraid of if you're doing your job. In fact, if I was a legislature and especially a great one like I have here. I don't have a she is my hero. She's just the greatest legislature that I have, I work with, and she is very dear to a lot of people. And I just happen to really enjoy supporting her stuff because she takes so many blows, but she has no fear. She can take a bill that she knows they're going to beat her up on and throw it in the street. And I just use her as an example because I know how much tough legislation she runs. You know, she runs all the 10th Amendment stuff for Michael. And the fact is, a good legislature can run legislation that the people want through this process. And get it accomplished. The only one who has to fear it is somebody that does not want to do what the... I thought it was representative government. That was what I was under the impression. But maybe it's
right.
Not.
Well, I think we might have an answer here. It looks like Kyle popped back up on the switchboard here. Let's see if he's got an answer for us. You got an answer for us, Kyle?
Yeah, I'm going to beat a dead horse, believe it or not. It looks
oh,
like
no.
a problem.
Let me guess, the governor appointed him, right?
Actually, no. It's some old. What occurred is that you're on the right track. It's some old appointments that have not been house cleaned, and this is a legislative issue. Legislature has not done some house cleaning that it needed to do on appointments. That is the number one problem. It's not under Trey or Justin, which is the comptroller or the secretary of state, so they're not guilty on this one. But the Fiscal Review Committee is set up in 1967. It's got, about nine House members and six Senate members. But the problem is that some of the people in there, it's the appointments that are on, that are doing all the work. There's your problem. Democrat appointments still hanging in there.
Wow.
Kyle, would you post that information, just a link to it on the Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation Facebook page so I can look into that because I am doing an editorial on that right now?
Okay.
If you just Google Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation, there's a number of web pages that I'm associated with, and I check them all the time. And I'm the number one hit on Google, and you just hit that, and there's all kinds of different places you can go and post it. Or you can send it to Dave. He'll just forward it to me. Yeah.
I'll do that and everything. So anyway, bottom line, it's not a Secretary of State or Comptroller. This is just some old bureaucratic Democrats that are still in there, left over from the Democratic legislature when they controlled it, and they just had house cleaned either. That's the biggest problem. And
well, you know, Kyle, you threw me for a loop because those things appear within 20 minutes after we think we've cleared a hurdle, and that's what threw me for a loop. I say, we couldn't have a whole committee unless they have these already ready to go, and they say we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we're just going to keep tossing them at them.
There you go. Now, again, it's... Now, I'm sure that there's some people that above them that are pulling some strings of these appointments, and I got a feeling I know who, but I'll put that.
We'll do another show on that one. We can do another show on that one.
All right, y'all take care.
Thank you, Kyle.
Kyle.
I appreciate that very much. Very informative.
Bill, we got about a minute left, Bill. Before the next guest, before I have to take a break. And so I'll just let you close this out here. And I do appreciate you coming on, and we'll definitely have you back on this issue. So go ahead and give you the last minute.
Well, I just want to educate. That's my primary goal. I've started many movements, and you start breaking the ice by educating people, testing the waters, finding out what they do know, what they don't know. Letting them know, removing the fear, convincing them that something is actually an asset for them. That's how I run a movement, a reform movement. Did it with annexation. That one's over. It's done. It's closed out. Goodbye. Now we're on to our next one. And that's the key. Sometimes it takes 2, 3, 4 years. Sometimes it's done in a year. But that's the key. Just educate people. familiarize them with it, show them the good things that have happened. A lot of great reform things all over the United States have happened through a citizens' initiative. And that's all. I just want to break the ice and start educating people and opening up their mind so they don't get quite as scared about the process.
Well, Bill, we're just about we're out of time, but is there any place that you're going to is this information going to be posted maybe on your TAFA website, or is there some other website where people can learn more about this process?
No, not yet. Well, you know, all they've got to do is Google it, Citizens Initiative. There's all kinds of stuff, and there's a lot of negative stuff, too, so they could read everything.
The good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah, I want, because that's the way you learn. And but
well,
just all they got to do.
Up against the heartbreak, I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to let you go. But thanks again for coming on, and we'll have you back. And I hope to be talking about this a lot over the next couple of years. And I hope
God bless you for the work you do. We appreciate it. And thank you for the work you did on annexation from Mr. Carter, Representative Van Hus, and all the citizens. You helped correct a very bad problem in certain counties, not as many as we think, but yet the county. So you guys did a great job, and we couldn't have done it without you. So thank you.
I did a few emails and phone calls. You guys did the hard work on that, and I appreciate it. Going to have to let you go. Yeah. Thanks again, and we will talk to you next time. All right, don't go away.
God,
we're going to take a short break.
Yeah, thank you.
God bless you, too. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this short break. We'll be up with Sean Crowell, who is running for governor on the Constitution Party platform. Be back in just a minute.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good afternoon. For the Talk Radio News Service, I'm Justin Duckham. A new report from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office found that the Affordable Care Act will cost less than it initially believed. According to new data, the CBO now believes that the law will cost the U.S. $36 billion in 2014, down from $41 billion initially projected, and $1,383 billion between 2015 and 2024, $104 billion less than the previous projections. The CBO also announced that it is lowering its projections for the federal deficit for the upcoming fiscal year, now saying that the deficit will fall to $492 billion. And just in time for April 15th, a majority of Americans believe that they are paying too much in federal income taxes, according to a Gallup poll released Monday. 52% said that the amount they pay is too high, while 42% said it was about right. Just 3% said that the amount they pay is too low. Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, pcsforautomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Meadows, host of Graceland. Join myself and author Curtis Mang on Thursday nights for some common sense conservatism from the soul of the South. That's Graceland from 10 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 9 to 10 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we have Sean Crowell with us, Dr. Sean Crowell. He is the gubernatorial candidate for the Constitution Party in the state of Tennessee this year. Thank you for being with us tonight, Dr. Crowell.
Thank you, Dave, for having me.
And, of course, the first question is, why? What possessed you to run for governor of Tennessee? I'm curious, and I'm sure the listeners are as well.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. Some may be familiar with me. I ran initially 2 years ago for U.S. Senate against Bob Corker, and I really got into politics in 2008 when the whole banker bailout thing happened, the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act. I had historically been a Republican and voted for George W. Bush twice and thought he was a great president until I started really investigating what happened during his time in office and how the federal government grew at an alarming rate. Anyway, it got me politically charged. I kind of joined the Tea Party movement in more of a separated thought process. I watched what they were doing, agreed with what they were doing. I didn't really get involved until I fully had a handle on where I was going politically, and then I decided to run against Corker because I realized that nobody else that was going to run against him that I would vote for, and I told my wife I would never vote for anybody that voted for that bailout act. So that's what got me into politics. I decided to do that on my own in 2012. This year I was asked by some people out in West Tennessee if I would run as governor for the Constitution Party, and I had to think about it that day, and I talked to my wife for a little bit and spent time with the good Lord, and he gave me the thumbs up, and so here I am.
Okay. Now, your background, you're a veterinarian, and you, what part of the state are you from?
Originally from Northwest Tennessee, from Union City, but I've lived all over the state, and I currently reside in a suburb in Nashville, Spring Hill, Tennessee.
Oh, okay. I know the area. Nice area. So, okay, Constitution Party platform. We've had I've had Dave Nance, and I've had others on, Mike Warner, who are in the Constitution Party, and I'm in the Constitution Party as well. But obviously, it's a long shot any time you take on any incumbent, and of course, Governor Haslam is well funded. He can pay his own meal ticket on this, and I guess you could say he, to some degree, bought this position, or of course, people had to vote for him. What is it you're going to offer the people that, you think would convince enough of them to vote for you?
Well, I think the biggest thing and the glaring thing that we should really wake up and see in our country is Haslam's a perfect example of what I call the establishment. And when I say establishment, it happens in both the Republican and Democratic parties where there is this ruling elite that kind of get elected to offices and they do the bidding of what I see as a common entity that is very hostile to our republic form of government. And so Haslam's a part of that, and he's a billionaire. And so, what makes me different? Hey, I'm a middle-class guy. I'm a guy that goes to work every day and works hard for his paycheck. I'm a guy that, sees that the Obama administration continues to raise taxes on people like me who make less than $250,000 a year, and it is a struggle. Every year I struggle to pay my taxes, and so I know what it's like to be what most of you know what it's like, which is it's hard to live in this country anymore. It's hard to take hold of that American dream. I want my kids to grow up in a country that has freedoms, that stands on the Constitution, that has the Bill of Rights as the forefront legal document that is the rule of law and that everybody obeys, including our federal and state government. And that's what I want. I want to return this state and this country and help to start that process back to its founding roots, because I think we've lost it over the last 200-plus years.
Yeah, and you said something a minute ago, and I think you're absolutely right. there is really not much difference, if any difference, between the ruling elite, whether you're talking Democrat or Republican. And, you know, if you looked up Rhino in the dictionary, you could put Bill Haslam in there just as well as you could put Susan Collins in there from Maine, or Alexander for that matter. So you're right. He's he does not seem to be too concerned with our Bill of Rights. He doesn't seem to, you know, the 10th Amendment is a joke to him. He doesn't support it. Doesn't believe in it, apparently. Said he was going to support the Second Amendment before he was elected, but it seems like it's hard to get any decent Second Amendment legislation passed since he's been in office. So I think we do need somebody who's oriented on the 10th Amendment and the Bill of Rights, and you know, that the states, and I believe that the only way that we save our country, well, divine intervention, and that the states have to stand up to the federal government. Now, that when I say stand up, I'm not talking about a civil war. I'm just saying, hey, buddy, you know what? We still have a 10th Amendment. And if it's not one of your designated powers from Article 1, Section 8, then it belongs to us. And Bill Haslam is certainly not going to do that. Obviously, you've got a hard road ahead because, you know, you don't have the money, you don't have the name recognition. But I do think with the right message that, you know, I think there is a lot of people that would be interested. So have you thought about, you know, how you're going to get after it in terms of getting your name out there and getting your ideas out there? And what are some of the things, you know, we're facing a lot of things this year. You know, we've got the Common Core issue in Tennessee. We've got, you know, open carry. We've got other things going on in Tennessee. What are some of the issues that you'd like to weigh in on during this election year, that, you know, at the state level, the state issues that we're facing?
Yeah, I think that Common Core is probably going to be Bill Haslam's Achilles heel. And so anybody who opposes it like myself is going to immediately be thought of well by just regular parents. You know, you can attack people's health care. Obamacare, he helped issue the state exchanges in. You know, people say, well, he didn't. You know, he fought against it. But he introduced the Tennessee plan. It's basically Obamacare. You know, Haslam did that. It made some people mad, but the majority of people really didn't pay attention to it. What people really paid attention to was Common Core, because it affected the average parent. There are parents all in the city that I live in. It's 30,000 people, a lot of parents, a lot of kids. It's a middle-class community here in Spring Hill. And they are on Facebook, and they're talking, and they're mad when some of the people that I know are doing door-to-door local campaigning. They're coming against – the first thing that people ask is about Common Core. People are mad at Bill Haslam because he is pushing Common Core. And so the fact that Common Core is coming into this state, it's already here, and they're not really doing much about it, and all the talking heads in Nashville – are paying us really lip service, and they're really making a lot of people like myself who are educated on the issue very angry, because they're saying, oh, yeah, we voted to put it off. Well, that's not true. You know, it's being fully implemented. It's already implemented. You got to go and you got to repeal it. But Haslam certainly doesn't want to repeal it. He's trying to push it. And so do a lot of these, quote, conservative Republican congressmen that we have in Nashville, who said, oh, yeah, we're going to delay it. It's not delayed. It's in full implementation. So they were lying to me when I asked them face-to-face, and that's the kind of problems we've got. And if they can't see that it's going to destroy their kids and their grandkids, then we need to get them out, and we need to get people in who can lead this state and hopefully help our nation turn back around to where we need to go. And having a common system of standards across the United States, it flies, it's socialism, it flies right in the face of free market capitalism. Because if you look at free market capitalism, there needs to be competition. If you destroy all the competition in the free market, you're going to get problems. The same way in the school systems. We need competing school systems to get the best students to have the best thought processes out there, and that's not what's occurring with Common Core.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you 100%. Got to do a quick read here. Just when you think you've heard everything, those leftists in D.C. pull something else. They're going to keep on doing this until we run them out of town on a rail. And boy, do we need to do that. But what about in the meantime? What are you going to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left-wingers try to redistribute food and who knows what else in the name of social justice? Don't wait for the left to turn our world upside down. Get ready now. Make sure you can provide for your family in an emergency by going to the Patriot Depot, America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. You'll find everything from the emergency food supplies to the great patriotic gear you need today in the future. That's the Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Dr. Sean Crowell. He's a Constitution Party candidate for governor in Tennessee in 2014. Now, okay, obviously Common Core is an issue. Education in general, we had some issues with the textbooks. I don't know if you've kept up with that or not. Anything you want to comment on about the textbook situation?
You know, the only thing I know that, and I'm learning more about, but there's this Pearson Education Company that's sort of behind a lot of the Common Core and all the textbooks and things, and they've been around for a little bit of time, especially since Haslam's been governor. And there's some really seedy things that this company looks like it's tied into. It's got investors coming out of the Middle East, Libya and Iran, and maybe some other countries, but this thing is in our state, and they have a say-so and are having control in our education system, especially with Common Core. This is a problem here. Now, we have a textbook committee here in the state of Tennessee that is sort of starting to review the textbooks, but I still think that, you know, we've got some problems there with just some of the education, peripheral education institutions that the state is involved with.
Okay, well, I've got to take another quick break. And when we come back, I want you to just kind of lay out some of the other things that, you know, you would like to take on as governor, you know, how, you know, what a, you know, what you would hope to accomplish as governor of Tennessee. And granted, you know, we've only got an hour allotted. That's probably at least a two-hour conversation, but if you can just kind of hit some of the high points. But we'll do that right after this short break. Don't go away. You're listening to Inside Tennessee.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
One goat can make the difference between nourishment and hunger. One goat can make the difference between poverty and sustained income. In the war-torn areas of southern Sudan, one goat can make the difference between life and death. Find out how you can help. Visit goatsfortheoldgoat.org. That's goats, F-O-R, theoldgoat.org. Fighting hunger, one goat at a time.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Dr. Sean Crowell, candidate for governor on the Constitution Party platform. Common Core, so if you were governor, you would repeal Common Core?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's the first step that any governor needs to take right now is to repeal Common Core. But you have to look a little deeper. Common Core, you know, Haslam's been pushing for it. We see that Bill Gates is putting a lot of money behind it, hundreds of millions of dollars invested in the states to try to get it passed and get it through, which they so far have been successful. But all this ties back to also Race to the Top, which I like to call Race to the Bottom. It's really what it is. And so that was actually introduced prior to Haslam's administration at the end of Bredesen's term. They signed on to Race to the Top, and I think it was 2009, 2010, right around that time. We've got to repeal Common Core, but we also need to, at the same time, and maybe even more so, repeal Race to the Top, because with repealing Race to the Top, you're actually repealing the document that we signed on to allow these Common Core standards to come in. So both of those need to be repealed. And then my thought for education and what we could do for this state is really start putting it back into the hands of the local government, local municipalities to take care of the kids. Haslam, the other thing that a lot of people don't know about him is he's really been pushing for these charter schools. And one thing that's come to my attention and me gaining a knowledge and understanding is charter schools eliminate the local school board. So if you have a charter school in your area, you don't have a local elected school board anymore. You now have a charter school that is controlled at a higher level. And so that's the problem. We're losing the autonomy.
Charter schools, for those who don't know, and if I have the wrong understanding, please correct me, vouchers are used to send people to charter schools. Is that accurate?
Yes, and I don't know all the in-depth things of charter schools, but the voucher system plays into it. But it really is, it's just a school that's designed with the purpose of maximizing intelligent students coming together. So the premise, of course, is very good, as all of these good government intention premises are. But what we have settled for is a destruction of the local economy, too, because what happens is the local money gets pulled out of the economy with any charter school. You don't have any investment into the local economy, and local governments who have charter schools are losing hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars every year just because of that. And that's a problem because now they're not well-funded. And it's a real problem in the communities. It centralizes power. And any time that you look in government where power is being centralized, where things are starting to consolidate and grow larger, then we've got a problem here, and we're going in the wrong direction. And that's really what the charter school system's done, and that's what Haslam has pushed. Haslam loves it. The charter schools have grown at an enormous rate under his administration just the last 4 years, and he wants to continue to grow it. But it's a very big problem in Tennessee.
Now, personally, I don't think the federal government, there's nothing in the Constitution that authorizes them to be involved with education at the local level. And, of course, a lot of that they do through bribery. Would you be willing to make the pitch that, hey, look, we're kicking the federal government out of the state of Tennessee. We're not going to be involved in any of your federal programs, and we're going to forego all the federal money that's involved with that. Is that something you'd support?
When I ran for U.S. Senate against Corker, one of the big things I said is I was ready to destroy the U.S. Federal Department of Education, get rid of it. We don't need it. And the big thing, and I agree 100% with you, Dave, because the problem that I see in the state of Tennessee is we have a budget. This year, I think Haslam just proposed a $32.6 billion budget. And do you know what percentage of that budget is given by the federal government?
40%, 50%?
It's right at 50% now. It was 44% a couple of 3 years ago. I think we're right at the 50% level and growing. That means who's in control here? Are the people
now? Let me ask you something.
Control or not?
Let me ask you something on that. Okay, when you say given from the federal government, are you talking given for things like TennCare, which is essentially Medicaid for Tennessee, food stamps, and other, let's say, school programs? Is that 40%? Does that include people who are retirees, and does that include Social Security, people who are on Social Security? Do you know what those numbers are? Or are you just talking about direct payments from the federal government to Tennessee to fund different programs?
Right. I'm talking about the U.S. Department of Education. the U.S. Department of Transportation, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, all of those things, Medicaid, you know, which is part of the Department of Health and Human Services, all of those things that we get federal money from goes to fund all these projects. So that means that the federal government is controlling the state of Tennessee. And what I propose that we do during my administration is start this attrition process. You can't shut it off all the way because it's going to cause too much trouble. And I understand
right.
that. But people have become dependent on a system, and you can't just shut off the water valve. There'd just be too much problems, and people would just waste away. But what you can
you can't go cold turkey.
Right. You got to start the process of attrition. You've got to slowly scale back these numbers. And what I want to do is get the federal government out of our business. The problem here is the federal government says jump and Haslam says how high. And what we need to do as a state is we need to have more state sovereignty. We need to sort of circle the wagon. We need to get the federal government out of our business. And we need to do what our founding fathers had intended for us as a state to do, which is to be very self-sufficient. Yes, we have commerce with other states. Yes, we support a federal government that is very limited and small, but that's it. You know, we are supposed to be a more self-sufficient entity, and we are not that right now.
Well, I agree with you there, and I'm all for that. We've got a couple of minutes before our break. We have a caller on the line. Caller, you have a question? Dave, you have a question?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Okay. We'll go to Jerry here. I think he might have one for us. Jerry, you have a question for us?
Yeah, I'd like to invite Dr. Sean to join the group of the March on Nashville, because it's all about the things that he stands for. It's a good group that would be good to promote his name across the state, and I'd like to invite him to our meeting on May 10th, which you can give him the information for, and
okay.
become a part of the group, because I think it would be an excellent advantage for him to get known across the state. The March on Nashville is about the 10th Amendment, and to stress to our legislatures that we expect them to uphold the 10th Amendment and to protect us from the federal government, which is the oath they have taken to do. I mean, we have a situation right now going on in Nevada where the governor, who was elected by the people to protect them, has totally turned his back on them. And I believe in earnest that should a similar situation happen here in Tennessee, we'd get the same results from our governor. Now,
our governor would do as much as their governor has. He has at least complained. He hasn't done much more, but he has at least complained. My guess is our governor would, ask for more federal assistance would be my guess.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you with that. But, Sean, I would really like you to get involved with us with the March on Nashville and with this group, because I think it would be very beneficial to you. Our whole goal is everything that you stand for. And I think the folks should meet you. And it would, we're a pretty widespread group across the state. And, it would be beneficial to you to get your name known and get your purpose known. And I do invite you to our meeting on May 10th. Dave can give you the particulars on that, and he can tell you how to contact me, and so we can, get you involved with this and start working to help you get promoted across the state and get known across the state. And I've worked on a couple of other governor campaigns, and I'd be more than happy to do everything I can to help you. So, as far as Common Core, Common Core can be traced right back to Amendment 21. It has nothing to do with education.
Agenda
21. It's all about control. Yeah,
Agenda
right
21.
To Agenda 21. Yeah, Agenda 21, excuse me. And it has nothing to do with education. It's all about control. That's exactly what it's about. We need to get rid of it and get it out of our state. So, with that, I'll let you get back to Sean, but please think about joining us, Sean, and letting us help you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you, Jerry. And I'll get with you offline, Sean, and fill you in on some of the details on that. We're up against a hard break here. One of the worst nightmares that can fall on America today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be glad that you did. All right, we have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
Hello, this is Robin Zanner.
Hello, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick for Rad.
Some people think it's fun to drive drunk, but that's unacceptable.
Be smart. If you drink,
don't drive.
Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with gubernatorial candidate Sean Crowell from the Constitution Party, candidate for 2014 race for governor in Tennessee. And you were talking before the break, some of the things you would do, basically get the Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education out of Tennessee. I agree with that 100%. Now, you know, whether you're talking education or you're talking any of these other things that we get money for, Department of Transportation, you name it, one of the arguments that you're going to hear is we pay federal taxes too. Why shouldn't we take some of this money? So how do you respond to the people that are going to give you that argument?
Well, it's kind of like food, you know. If I go to Taco Bell, it tastes really good, love it, but it's poison to my body. It really is terrible for me, and I feel it later on. And that's the way the federal government is. So even though we're paying money in, it is, you know, we think in our minds, yes, we should receive services for that. I don't disagree with that. But on the flip side, that we're taking that poison from them, because whatever money we take from them, it is controlled by them on our lives. And, you know, I love the Constitution because it stands for life, liberty, and property. And that's what it's always stood for. And our federal government is very hostile to that. You know, the gentleman that was just on talking about the Nevada situation, I mean, that's an attack on property. That's an attack on the Constitution. And when he was talking about the Agenda 21 from the United Nations, that's really what you look at the United Nations agenda overall and who, what they are and who they stand and what they stand for. It's an attack against life. It's an attack against freedom and our republic, and it's attack against our private property ownership. And so everything that they stand for is hostile to us, and obviously they have had major influence over a lot of the leaders in this country.
Oh, yeah, on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, matter of fact, I think it was 2 years ago, the Tennessee State Legislature passed a resolution condemning Agenda 21. It's just a resolution, no teeth to it. At the national level, the GOP passed a resolution against it a couple years ago. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't have a lot of governors trying to implement it, or that they understand, you know, how many things fall under the umbrella of Agenda 21. Common Core is part of it. A lot of the stuff the EPA does is part of it. USDA, you name it. A lot of them are working under, you know, working towards that agenda. But, you know, I mentioned earlier, Article 1, Section 8 lays out what the federal government is supposed to do. And, you know, the 10th Amendment is still in effect, but kind of like what Judge Roberts said after he made the Obama decision, which the decision was bad, but the only good thing that he did say was, you know, for instance, that on the Medicaid issue, that that's a state decision because, you know, the states don't have to participate in that, and that states have to remember that they have 10th Amendment rights, but they have to exercise them. You know, a right's no good if your state's not willing to exercise it, or a power is no good if your state's not willing to use it. So, you know, we really can't get, if we're willing to accept funding for something that's clearly outside of Article 1, Section 8, then we're kind of compromising. You know, we're giving up a freedom that we don't have to give up and that we shouldn't give up, and we as citizens should not accept our state giving it up.
Right, yeah, and I agree. So, you know, it's one of those things that I can't remember which one it was in Section 8, but, you know, that Congress had the power to establish post offices and make roads, post roads. And so, you know, so the Federal Department of Transportation, you know, should be taking care of that. And we should kind of be okay taking that money. But when it comes to education, there's nothing in the Constitution about education. And even many philosophers on politics from way back, one that I can think of called Frederick Bastiat, who wrote a book called The Law that I love, very short book but a great read, you know, he talks about that basically public schools are socialism because they take from the people, and, you know, that he thought education should be privatized. And I really think that, you know, with homeschoolers and private schools, that education is doing better because of those. And I know my wife and I homeschool, and we have searched and looked for good curriculum, and we are doing what's called classical-style education with our children and love it and try to tell everybody about it because we think it's just a great way to teach, and it's actually what they taught years ago in the 1700s and 1800s. The style of education, and we think it's superior to what we have today.
Well, now, what are some of the other things that, in addition to education, obviously that's a big focus and that's a big ticket item. What are some of the other things as governor that you would like to see, federal programs that you'd like to see us opt out of, or at least start scaling back?
Well, you know, and I think Obamacare and the state exchanges, you know, I understand this. You know, if we don't accept Obamacare, we lose all of our federal money, all of our Medicaid money. I understand where the governor is on this tough position. The problem is you got to make a tough choice. And so,
hold on. Let me hold you up there real quick. I don't think we lose all the money. Now, he may be telling us that. But I think part of the Supreme Court's decision was that we would not lose the money. We wouldn't get the additional money. Because, of course, a lot of additional money comes into play when you start using their definition of the poverty line. I think it was 138% over the poverty line. That's how much you would be expanding your – so it would only affect the expansion. It wouldn't affect or was not supposed to affect those already on it.
And so my thought and what I would do as governor is basically say, I don't want your money. And so that would be what I would do. Now, yes, we have pre-existing Medicaid in this state, and I would do everything I can to keep that. But the Obamacare money, I don't want their money, and so we need to get rid of Obamacare. So that would be another thing I think that I would take a firm stand on. You know, it's just a crazy thought to think that our federal government has created a law to have health insurance. That would be, I mean, if you want to take this, I'm a veterinarian, if you want to take it to another degree, well, what keeps Obama from telling everybody they have to go visit the veterinarian? You know, I mean, let's make that a law. It certainly would help me, you know. So I say that on one hand, I'm just being crazy with my words because I don't believe that. It's a crazy thing for the federal government to enter the marketplace and to start forcing their opinions on people. That is a perfect example of socialism. You know, socialism just seeks to control people and to destroy people's lives through indoctrination. I had written something a couple years ago about socialism that I just wanted to share, but I said that socialism tries to replace God by legislation and law and thus enforces its brand of morality, education, and charity. And that really is what socialism does and what it leads to, because it completely is a nanny state then, is it causes the church, in effect, to potentially become very lazy in our charity. And so me as being a born-again Christian, that's a problem, because we need to be proactive as members of the body of Christ. We need to be out in the community loving God and loving our neighbor and helping people out. If people want to know how are the poor taken care of and all of these people groups, it doesn't need to be government. It needs to be the people. It needs to be charity, and that's how it comes, and it doesn't need to come through government mandate.
Yeah, I agree with you. Know, several years ago, and this was a Southern Baptist church in North Carolina when I was still in the Army. I was stationed down at Fort Bragg, and I brought a family, or actually it wasn't a family, it was a guy, to the attention of some of the people there at the church and some of the deacons. And I understand you have to be careful, or you'll be taken advantage of. I've got that. But one of the responses really bothered me, and it was, well, that's why we have welfare. And I'm like, you know, wow. That's definitely the wrong attitude. It should come as no surprise that our Constitution, the basis of our nation and the central core of our values, is under attack. It sometimes seems that everybody and his brother is trying to figure out an end run around the articles and amendments of the greatest governing document of all time. And if you're tired of leftist and unfriendly political forces telling America that our Constitution is a mere footnote, be advised that a lot of real Americans like you and me are going to come together at the Defend the Constitution rally in Waynesboro, Tennessee, just an hour southwest of Nashville, on the weekend of April 26. Great speakers like Scotty Nell Hughes, Karen Vaughn, and Joe Carr will be on hand, just to name a few. Great music, great food, and great times will be had by all. Go to defendtheconstitutionrally.com to learn more about this great event, and hope to see you there. And that's an event you might want to think about attending there, Dr. Crowell. I can send you some more information on that. There will be some good speakers there. Bill Warner's going to be there, Kathy Henners, and, of course, the others mentioned in this ad. But that's, you know, there will be somebody there speaking about the 10th Amendment as well, somebody from the 10th Amendment Center, Michael Meharry, I believe is his name. So we still got about another 15 minutes here before the show is over, and I want to get back to you on some of the other things that you would like to do as governor. Specifically, the federal things that you want to get us out of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's obviously the federal departments, all the cabinet-level departments from the Department of Agriculture on down. Obviously, they're huge government entities, and then they use this seed money through the federal government to control the states. And so, you know, we really, you know, I don't know. A lot of people may disagree with me, but being in politics for a while, I see that the federal government is a lost cause right now. We don't have enough U.S. senators who are solid conservatives. We don't have enough U.S. House of Representatives who are solid conservatives. Obviously, the president's not a conservative. And so we've got problems. And everything that comes out of Washington, we need to deal with almost like it is a foreign entity that could invade us at any point. And that's the thought process, because everything I hear from them, you know, when it's a bill coming out of Washington, D.C., I automatically nowadays think opposite. So So, for example, like I was just saying, Race to the Top came out of D.C. in 2009. It's Race to the Bottom. You know, Bush even pushed No Child Left Behind. That was, might as well say, Every Child Left Behind. That's what it's become. And so those things are, you just think opposite. And so, you know, I think we have a hostile entity that is hostile to the republic form of government that is in Washington, D.C., and we've lost it. So, you know, the 17th Amendment, I mean, we didn't lose it just recently with the Obama administration. We lost it, you know, it's been under attack for over 100 years now. And it's a problem. It's a consistent problem that has affected our nation and affected our state. And I was going to come back to the 17th Amendment because I'm a proponent of state sovereignty. And, you know, the 17th Amendment changed the way that U.S. senators are elected from the state legislature having say-so and power to elect that representative. Now it's a popular vote through the state. And that was an attack on state sovereignty. And it happened years ago in 1913. So we've had problems for well over 100 years in this country. And we're only, I think, I praise God for the Internet because it has allowed people to come together with different thought processes that are very truthful and understandings of the Constitution, of our Founding Fathers, the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. All of these things are coming together, and we're really learning in this day and age a lot of good information on how our government really should run and how bad it is now. And so my thought is to be a good governor of the state of Tennessee, try to stay away from the federal government. And I think anybody that does that and makes an effort every day to do that, like I would, and to stand on the Constitution like I would, and to limit the size and scope of state government like I would, and to try to help empower the people in their local communities to take hold of this state and to make it a better place, I think that's going to be the best governor that the state of Tennessee needs, and that's who I am.
What are some of the things that, you know, for instance, Medicaid, I mean, that's still a federal program. And, you know, I'm all for taking care of people that need help and can't do it on their own, but I don't like to see it come from the federal level. I think those things should be at the state level. And there's nothing wrong with the state. If a state wanted to have, you know, if 10 care were literally just state funds, you know, that's a much better deal than the federal government being involved with people's health care in our state. Do you have any ideas on how maybe you could replace something like that, you know, to where it would be just program?
I'll be honest with you. I think that we're going to have to lessen the amount of federal money. Obviously, I've already said that through Medicaid. But so we can replace it early on with revenue that we generate within the state. But I think we need to come to an understanding in this country especially and in our state that any kind of government-related health care, whether it be at the federal level or the state level, is socialism. And we can't have it. We don't need it, and we don't need it at the local level even. We need the government out of the people's business. And so what that means is, you know, do we need insurance companies? You know, I think the reason that we have out-of-control health care costs in this country is because that the federal government is involved in it through Medicare and Medicaid, all of that stuff, even Social Security when you think about it, all of that pumps up the system and inflates the cost. And the reason I say that is, you know, if I have Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and I have, you know, I can go to the emergency room anytime I want to, I can go to the doctor anytime I want to, you know what I'm going to do? I'm probably going to go to the emergency room and doctor more frequently than if I had to pay for it out of my own pocket or out of my own savings. And so that's the problem here is we've got a mentality that is entrenched in socialism. It has been for a long time, and we've got to get away from it. We've got to get back to understanding that, hey, what you need to do is you need to go to your doctor, and you need, all of a sudden, if it's between you and the doctor and even take the insurance companies out of it and take the government out of it, and it's a doctor-patient relationship and you're paying like it is in the veterinary field, guess what? The costs start to come down. And people get mad now because they go to their veterinarian and it's very expensive to take your dog to the vet. And people go, I don't understand why my vet bill's, you know, more expensive than my own doctor bill, whatever. And I'm like, it's because of human medicine, because all of our drugs and all the things we use in surgery come from the human side. And they raise our costs twice a year. In January and July, our costs go up twice a year. So the reason your veterinary bill's high is because human medicine's high. The reason human medicine bills are high is because the federal government and the state governments are all involved in health care. They need to get out and let the people make their own decisions. Let's let the free markets rule, and let's get the government out of the people's business.
Well, we've got a few minutes, so let's talk about your campaign. What, you know, website, events planned, how do people find out more about you?
Yeah, the website is being built as we speak, so I apologize if you're trying to find me on the web. You can go to crowell4gov.com, crowell4gov.com, and you can see a little bit about me. It's just a little construction site with a little information about me and a little place to contact me through the campaign. And eventually we'll build a better website that will list all the issues that I stand for and then some of the things that people can get involved with the events I'll be at and speaking at. So I'd love to have you come to my website and visit.
Okay. Where are you at on the Second Amendment? I'm sure you support it, but I'm just curious what your understanding of the Second Amendment is.
Yeah, you know, the Second Amendment, I've learned a lot about it because I used to think, oh, yeah, it was just there to protect people, you know, who want to protect their own homes or even let people go hunt for their food. But it's so much more than that. And I've learned a lot through people like John Harris at the Tennessee Firearms Association and just other people that, you know, it really was put in place. It provides for those hunters, and it provides for those people who want to defend their home, but it's beyond that. It was put in place so that the people would understand that the government, at its worst, would do tyranny, that they would be oppressive to the people, and that it was our right, our unalienable, God-given right to fight back and to have every capability that that government has, which obviously we don't see in this country today. Obviously our government or the mainstream media would never even tell us that truth, but that is the truth of why the Second Amendment was put. It was to protect us against government tyranny.
Kurt, you have any questions or comments?
Just a couple of comments real quick. Dr. Crowell, this is Kurt Blackwood over in Paris, Tennessee. We met over in Waverly back when you were running against Bob Corker there.
Yes, sir.
Kind of
I said, yes, sir. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to hear you. And it's kind of ironic because at that point in time, I was president of the local Tea Party group. Well, now I happen to be chairman of the Henry County GOP, which brings on a whole new can of worms, as it were. It's obvious that I can't jump up and down and sing the praises of the Constitution Party in this circumstance. However, I am glad to see you in this race. I will tell you that. I know who you are, and I know what you're about. And this the whole situation of politics, in my opinion, we went way past the issue of Democrat versus Republican a long, long time ago. And frankly, I don't know what the answer is. The answer is out there somewhere, and we're going to have to all search for it together. And I just hope that I want to wish you great success and good luck in your endeavor. And I'm sure we'll be crossing paths before this whole thing's over, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
You know, okay, there will be a couple of Democrats in the race, or there'll be one at least, probably Mark Clayton. I don't know, maybe they've already disqualified him again. Haslam will, you know, win the primary, so it will be a three-way race when it's all said and done. It will be Haslam, you, or the Democrat. And, of course, in situations like that, normally the GOP will tell you, well, you know, if you vote for the third party, you split the vote, and then you give it to the Democrat. Well, I don't think anybody believes that a Democrat is going to defeat Haslam in this election, because whoever the Democrat is, I mean, everything's already been filed, okay? So there's no big names out there. I don't even know the names of the Democratic guys, so they're, but they're not big names. They're not going to be that well-funded at this point anyway. They don't appear to be. And we have the choice, our Republicans. Let's just say this. Speaking for the Republicans, even though I'm in the Constitution Party, I don't know how any Republican who's a conservative could justify voting for Haslam again when they have an opportunity to vote for somebody who, even though the person is not a Republican, they are constitutionally minded and they are conservative. So I would hope that the Republicans out there who are constitutionally minded and are conservative would vote for principle and not party in the general election. And I hope that's the way it turns out. And if enough of them do that, then maybe I'll be talking to Governor Crowell before too long, after November.
Yeah, that would sound good. I think you're right. I think if anybody educates themselves on Haslam's voting record and the fact that he claims to be conservative and is just another rhino, they'll naturally vote for me. And so already I'm getting a whole lot of chatter across the state, from East Tennessee to Middle Tennessee to West Tennessee, from Tea Party supporters backing my campaign. I know I've heard from some other people and other groups, 912 groups, that are excited about my candidacy, which are the 912 groups or the Glenn Beck groups. So there's a lot of people coming together that are really starting to back my candidacy. And I think the other thing, you just spoke about it, with Mark Clayton most likely going to be the Democratic nominee, who was disavowed by the party when he ran it against me for U.S. Senate, he's going to be the Democrat nominee. What's going to be interesting this time around is that a lot of Democrats that are, or I should say a lot of UAW people, United Auto Workers, the union there, are Democrats. They're not going to want to vote for Mark Clayton because he's been disavowed by the party. And that leaves them either not voting for the governor, because they're mad at Haslam right now. If you kept up with anything, this Volkswagen plant down in Chattanooga, both Corker and Haslam did a lot of manipulating and politicking. They spent a lot of money, offered a lot of incentives, and they ended up getting the VW plant to not vote to unionize. Well, that made the union very, very mad. And I think that there's a possibility that a lot of those union people, if they find out about my campaign, will be excited to vote for me as well, because they're not going to vote for the Democrat, and they're very mad at Haslam. And so now it leaves them without voting, and they probably can come around and maybe even vote for me. You know, they would never probably vote Republican, but they will certainly maybe vote Constitution Party, especially if they know that Haslam could be defeated. And then the other thing is teachers, too. The teachers are very mad at Haslam over Common Core. He recently said he didn't want to raise their wages. So there's a lot of things that the teachers are already telling me on my Facebook messages, a lot of teachers I know. I will vote for you, Sean. I will tell every teacher to vote for you, because we don't like Haslam. And so that's big. And so we get these people groups together that are frustrated with Haslam, get the regular parents together that are mad over Common Core, and I think Haslam in November may not be the next governor, and I might be that guy.
Well, I hope that is the way it turns out. I know I definitely have Haslam fatigue. I want to thank you for being on the show, and I hope to have you back, and good luck in the campaign, and I thank you for doing it. You know, you picked up. But anyway, we're out of time. Thanks again, and we will talk to you again later. Thank you for joining us.
Bye-bye.
back.